Cook and Moore had come to New York to do their two-man show.
Greg Proops.
And then my friend Shauna gave me the Derek and Clive record when I was about 17. And I'd never heard anyone use the C word, as we say in America, that many times in routine. And we would, of course, die laughing. I didn't know that it was Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. I thought it was two guys named Derek and Clive who were just some filthy English team, you know.
Just the stream of filth they used to come out with, which I just thought was hilarious at the time. It sounds a bit indulgent now, but when you first hear it, you can't help but... It's very infectious, that laughter, drunken laughter. It's two blokes just drunk out of their minds, wittering on.
There was also a huge kind of illicit thrill in just chancing upon two people who swore that much.
David Baddiel.
And were so graphic and unpleasant in the way they talked about sex and death. Actually, I went to Peter Cook's memorial service. I was quite upset that they had a whole list of his credits and they didn't mention Derek and Clive. And obviously, Peter Cook did a lot of good stuff, and I think he was a very funny bloke. But for me, Derek and Clive was the height of his achievements, obviously, with Dudley Moore, for a number of reasons. But the two basic ones, I think, were it's the most of anything I've ever heard. It does give a sense more than anything that it's just being said. It's just people going into somewhere and just saying, completely without restriction or without self-censorship, stuff that comes out of their heads. And I like it when people do that in a way that means that they're allowing their sort of darkest and most unpleasant thoughts come through, because for me, honesty is incredibly important in comedy. Also, I think, you know, they predate alternative comedy, because obviously one thing alternative comedy did was introduce swearing and the discussion of sex in a very graphic way, as opposed to an innuendo-based way, which is what it had been in the past. In a way that I think was liberating. But I think Derek and Clive did it beforehand.
I bought a ball bearing business down Dalwich Way, and it's doing quite well.
Yeah, it's better that.
Our turnover is up to 3,000 3,000 a week, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
And the good thing about ball bearings is that...
everybody needs ball bearings.
Well, that's what I say. The wife says, well, why don't you become a television star? And I say, why do I need it when I've got my ball bearings to keep me rolling?
Yeah.
And she still liked me to be on the telly.
Yeah.
So I volunteered for this new game they got on, Celebrity Suicide.
Oh, yeah.
In which well-known celebrities hang themselves. And the last person to die gets £1,000.
That's good.
But I wasn't selected. I said, is it because I'm only 1 inch high and 4 foot wide? And they said, no, it's nothing to do with that, because, you know, I'm very wide on the ground and short in the air. And they said, no, it's nothing to do with that. They said, the basic fact is we think you're a...
That's unusual.
And we don't like on the show because it puts off the audience. And so I went away with the flea in my ear.
Best place to have it.
Really, yeah. And the wife is still on about me being a celebrity, you know, and she is on Blow Your Tits Up.
People have made a lot of the fact that Peter Cook didn't really do much after he split up with Dudley Moore. But he did some things, and Dudley Moore did nothing. So, you know, by comparison, an infinite number of things.
If I could do one thing that good ever, you know, you would retire. I mean, you can see why Peter Cook thought he didn't have anything to prove, and why Dudley Moore was driven mad by him as well.
He was brilliant, and because he kept Private Eye going, he really virtually single-handedly kept that magazine going, and you could see his humour running throughout it, and his influence and his inspiration, you know, with new columns and little bits and pieces he'd write. And he was very not about money or anything or taking it all for himself. He was really generous and kind. Well, not kind-hearted doesn't seem to be right to say about Peter. He was a good spirit and an encourager of people to complain and moan about what was going wrong. And he had a great nose for phony and the false.
I was upset when he died about the coverage that he got, and there were sort of a bit saying that he was the underachiever of the group.
Nigel Planer.
The original Beyond the Fringe group, because Alan Bennett writes plays and Jonathan Miller directs operas and Dudley Moore's a movie star. And so, you know, Peter Cook hasn't done the Hello Magazine spread sort of thing, so he's classed as an underachiever. But actually, I feel his influence was
enormous.
People seem to assume that if someone isn't working their arse off all the time, that they're no good. And I think in Peter Cook's case, it was just that he didn't care. It didn't matter to him that much if he was on stage or television. I know people that knew him, and they also, he was, you know, in the pub, he would give you as fine a performance as he ever would anywhere else. And I'm sure he was always performing, but to him, he was just as comfy telling jokes to a mate as he was on a stage or in a film or whatever. Or just phoning up, you know, what was it, Capital Radio that he used to phone up and winding people up just for his own amusement.
He recorded a series of interviews with Chris Morris, which was Sir Arthur Strieb Griebling reminiscing about his life, called Why Bother, which sort of sums it up, really.
Sorry, I wasn't listening to that. Are you ready to go?
Yes, I'm off in a minute.
Sir Arthur, your work with eels is very well documented. It's perhaps less well known that during one experiment you came very close to death. How did that happen?
I was trying to test the strength of the eel and whether the strength of the eel was enhanced by an injection of thiobisulin, which, as you probably know, is a steroid much used by Betty Grable in the early days of Hollywood, which gave her those wonderful legs, because she was born with legs only 3 inches long. And her parents were determined to have a world-class film star-style daughter. But through administration of this drug and what is called tugging, namely pulling by the ankles, they managed to get Grable's legs up to the required film star length.
But they weren't just long, were they? They flexed backwards.
She could walk both ways, yes. Which was an effect which startled Louis B. Mayer. Once I remember Louis B. Mayer was on his casting couch, casting himself. And suddenly he thought he saw Betty Grable walking in. In fact, she was walking out. And that got up his nose. He was easily slighted.
Let's get back to you fighting the eel on the table. I believe during the course of that encounter, you did very nearly die. Did you ever think during the struggle, I don't care if it kills me?
Well, there were moments. There were moments where I thought, well, I've had a long life. I've had a varied life. And I've had just about enough of it, really, all these bloody eels. Bloody, bloody, bloody eels. I mean, as soon as you get hold of one, they start slithering all over the table. You ask them what's the secret of their jaw moving, they don't say a bloody thing. So I was tempted. But there was work to be done, and it will be done. And I will be done.
Cook is a fascinating character, because there's all this stuff about, oh, he didn't fulfil his potential and everything, but he did, completely, and he did it before he was 25. And I think, you know, fair enough, put your feet up for the rest of your life if that's what you want to do.
The comedians praising Peter Cook were David Baddiel, Bill Bailey, Lenny Henry, Eric Idle, Mark Lamar, Al Murray, Nigel Planer, Greg Proops and Arthur Smith. The Comedians' Comedians was written by Jeremy Pascal and produced by John Pidgeon. And next week's Comedians' Comedian...
TV never was big enough for him because he's too honest. You can't sell potato chips or whatever and then have a guy come on and say black people are being killed by police.
This was a guy that was swearing and talking about drugs and sex and like that, you know. So one got a sense that if that sort of thing was possible in the States, then why wasn't it possible here, you know?